The podcast where we talk to your favorite bands about how your favorite bands became your favorite bands. I'm Brandon. Per usual, I'm the best friend in the whole wide world, Dave. Dave, hi, buddy.
Ahoy there, matey Brand.
So good to hear from you. It's been a minute.
Yep.
Today's a big one. Yeah. We've been working on this one since the beginning of time, it seems like, and we finally did it. I've been a big fan of these guys for a long time. I think they were one of my first concerts I ever saw, which like maybe dates them and also dates me. But I'm very excited to talk to them. We've got Davey, Sam, and Jared from the band Bleach. Fellas, how are you doing?
Hey,
good. What's good?
Awesome, man.
Did it make you feel a little old when I said what I said?
You didn't have to say that to make us feel old.
Not me. I was the youngest in the band.
Yeah, Jared was like 8 when he started with this. So
yeah.
Jared, how old were you? How old were you guys when you started the band?
I think when I first joined, I just turned 19.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah, maybe 18.
He was the baby. I think you were 18.
Man, I might have been 18.
I think you were 12.
I think I was 12.
I remember, you were 12.
Yeah.
It's always the drummer that comes in young. Yeah.
Yeah, the drummer for Amberlin was like 14 or something when he joined, which was stupid.
And same with Mute Math. He was like 10 years younger, Darren is, than the rest of
you. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I guess we're just ahead of our times, you know?
That's right.
And you have to have that energy because it's a lot more physically taxing to play the drums than other instruments.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You're right.
Well,
absolutely.
Singing is pretty hard.
Yeah,
guys.
And we just used a drum machine anyway. Jared never really ever even played. So
acting like you're playing the drums is pretty tough, I guess. Still got to move those arms.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Like the muted parents.
Just flail.
Yeah. Best air drummer in the world.
Thank you, guys.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know.
Well, it is a true joy, my friends, to talk to you guys. And let's get right to it. You guys started way back in the day, I believe in 1995, if my Wikipedia search is
somewhere
correct.
Somewhere around that.
So talk a little bit about how you guys formed. Wikipedia, I don't know if you know this about your Wikipedia page. It says that you originally called Blueberry Muffin. Don't know if that's true. You can confirm it and just talk about how you guys started.
That's about half true.
Yeah, that's a half truth. Yeah,
we were actually
you guys were called
Muffin.
Blueberry.
No,
just
the old BM.
Yeah,
the worst.
BM,
the worst.
Yeah. No, we were called Muffin. We were called Muffin, and we learned that wasn't going to work. so we changed it.
So
later
you went
on
with Bleach.
Yeah. Yeah. From one stupid name to another, you know. I guess it doesn't really matter. It's rock and roll. Yeah.
But so Davey and Sam, you guys have been at since the beginning, that's right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So talk about how you guys kind of formed together and why you guys decided to start a band.
Well, we, I came to college. I was like a year younger than Matt and Sam. So Matt and Sam were already kind of together and they started doing music a little bit. And I was like a year after them. I was a freshman. They were
sophomores.
Yeah, and when I got there, I was my kind of position. Well, basically, I was like not gonna get in a band. I love music, but I didn't really want to be in a band. I wanted to like kind of focus on school, which is kind of a joke if you think about if you know me that I would actually say that. But there was like basically two bands on campus. I mean, this school we went to was so small,
like 600 or 700
what
students.
What school was
yeah.
it?
Kentucky Christian College at the time, but now it's Kentucky Christian University. But so there were two bands on campus, and one of the bands asked me to play guitar with them, but I broke my arm skateboarding the very first day of school. And the guy walked by and he's like, he walked by and he was like, saw I had some guitars in my room, and he, you know, that was enough to like qualify me to be in a band at that school. And they were like, right. He was like, you want to play guitar, like try out as soon as your cast comes off? And I was like, yeah, sure. In the meantime, Sam and Matt's band were playing, and I met Sam. I was a little intimidated by him. He had a like buzz cut, kind of looked like a skinhead, kind of scared. He had big boots on and stuff, and I was just like combat boots, and I was like, whoa, dude, that guy's cool. And he asked me, they just were like, hey, do you want to come try out for our band? We need a singer. And I was like, sure. Same thing. We'd kind of gotten to know each other a little bit, and he saw that I had like stuff in my room, like a microphone and some speakers and stuff, and and some guitars,
which was enough to make him a singer in our band.
Yeah, which I was not good at either one of the things, singing or playing guitar, but somehow it worked out. So, yeah. So that's how it happened, and we just started playing. I remember the very first practice. I was just like. I think I just came and watched you guys one time.
Maybe so.
I was just like, this band is freaking cool. Like, it just felt like there was something different to it. And, yeah, and then it just kind of took off from there. We, a little bit, like I'd say about a year and a half later, we got a record deal, and I had to tell my dad that I was dropping out of college to join a band and move into Nashville, and that was pretty cool.
We all had to have that conversation with our parents. Now that I'm a dad, I have high school kids, and so it's like I think about this a little differently now. But you know, like Eddie DeGarmo's, who signed us to our first record deal, and he had to have all of our parents' blessing in order to make the deal happen, because he didn't want to rip us out of college and then have a bunch of moms and dads mad at him. You know, so it was really honorable the way he did it. You know, so he said, "Look, I want to offer this to you, but I need to have your mom and dad's blessing." So he had a conversation with them separate from us. So really, our record deal, it's funny to think about, but kind of hinged on all of our parents saying, yeah, we'll give you our blessing.
That's awesome. When they realized it was the real thing, all of our parents were super stoked. But, yeah. You know, when you just say, I joined a band in college and now I'm going to drop out of college, that's kind of a big hit. Yeah. But the crazy thing is before we got our deal with Forefront, we made these cassette tapes.
Yeah.
We couldn't afford CDs even at that time. Yeah. We made these cassette tapes and we sent them off to, I think we just sent them to Tooth and Nail. I think that's the only person we sent. And they called us back, but which we thought was awesome. We thought we've made it just because they called us back, but they basically were like, have you done any shows? And we're like, not really. Do you have any press? And we're like, no. And they're like, well, do some shows and get some press. And if you're ever out in California playing a show, which to us with that at that point was like,
if you ever go to
Mars and play a show, then we'll be there. You know, that was about the same difference. So, but they gracefully turned us down. And then later we signed a Tooth and Nail.
Yeah,
so.
they did it. They would come back around.
That's right.
So that first album, Space, came out like a year later after in 1966.
Yeah, we're not that old, dude.
Come on, bro. Okay, so talk about what it was like to record that album. And talk about how you ended up on Forefront after you kind of mentioned that you only sent the demos to.
Yeah, we did that demo, and there was this thing every summer called Summer in the Sun. It was like a youth convention that we did that happened at the college, and so I was there for part of the summer, and Audio Drone was like the band that was playing, you know, the show at the end of the week for the camp. And so I thought, well, shoot, I'm going to give Barry Blair, the guitar player or whoever, this demo that we had done. It was, I don't know, there was nothing in tune on this demo. Like, it's funny to listen to now, but we didn't know how to tune guitars or anything like that yet. So, so anyway, we gave it to Barry Blair, who was the original guitar player for Audio Drone. And a couple weeks later, we get a phone call, and Barry asked, and we just about, you know, he said, hey, I like it, you know, I like what, you know, what you guys are doing. And he's like, would you be interested in me coming and producing another demo? One that actually you tune your guitars on, kind of a thing. we're like right. yeah, you know, because, you know, and again, like, it was at that point, it was like, oh, we've made it now, you know, like, Audio Drone guy's gonna come here, our, you know, help us. And so he comes to town and spends, what, like a week or something with us? Yeah. Not even that, probably. Maybe like 3 or 4 days. And we do a second demo, and we don't hear anything for, I don't know, for a couple months. And it was right around Christmas time. We were getting ready to go on Christmas break. We got a phone call from Barry, and he said that he was at a Christmas party with Forefront, with a bunch of the artists that, there, you know, and Eddie DeGarmo was at the party, and Eddie was like, hey, Barry, what have you been up to? And Barry was like, oh, you know, I touring, blah, blah, blah. I produced this band, and this band from the same school that we went to, because Audio Drone actually went to Kentucky Christian College a few years ahead of us. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, so kind of a cool little tie. But so Eddie was like, well, let me hear it. So he played it for Eddie, and we had this song on the demo that was called Epidermis Girl, which was a song that was on our first album. And Eddie loved it, you know, and started the conversation then. And so he came out and saw a few shows, like that we had, you know, the first one he came to was one that we set up on our campus at school. And so it was obviously like this, you know, everybody there was supporting us and were excited about what was happening. And so,
yeah, it was a very loaded event.
Yeah, like, it was loaded for like, sure.
I mean, like, you know, imagine small college in the middle of Eastern Kentucky, pretty much nowhere, 700 students on the like TVs. For like 2 weeks leading up to it, it was saying stuff like, you know, president, record executive coming to see us, Muffin, you know? And so, and it had a show date. And so there was a local sound company that we were friends with, and they came and like provided sound, like professional sound. So everybody came, even people that weren't our friends came to the show. And they like went nuts, you know. People were crowd surfing, people were going crazy, screaming, and so that was good for us, you know. Like Eddie was like, "Whoa, this is kind of a big deal," you know. Really, it was just kind of a setup, I think.
Yeah, I think it was as much. It was loaded to our advantage, but I think he thought it was awesome. But also, I think he kind of saw through the smoke and mirrors a little bit, because he wanted to come see, you know, quite a few more shows before he really. Kind of offered anything. And so we played, I know there's at least a couple more that he came to, and the one that where we got our record deal,
yeah, he had our parents come to the show.
Yeah, came to the show. And was it Trader's Point?
Yeah, it was like at a church, and it was not loaded.
Yeah, not at all.
It was like, it was not set up or anything. And we like literally afterwards we're sitting there, and he's had our parents, he's met all of our parents. There's like this expectation that we're going to be signed because he's already talked to all our parents and asked them how they felt about it, you know. And get done with the show, and he takes us all up to this room, and we're all sitting in a circle, and he's like, "You guys were not good."
Yeah.
He's like, "Your guitar was out of tune."
Oh man.
You know, you weren't singing on pitch. You know, the drums and the bass weren't locked up. And he goes on, and we're just like feeling like, okay, we just screwed it up, you know? And finally, Sam, if you know Sam, you'll know this is part of his personality, but he's like bubbling over there. Like, he's just like, it's just building up.
Let me know.
And so, like, Eddie's just kind of tearing us a new one, really. And he gets down to he's like, yeah, and you did this wrong, and this wasn't good. And Sam's like, do we have a deal or not? Like, full on just goes like that. And then he went on, and then he would, like a good, you know, teacher or mentor would do. Then he went on and like told us all the good things we did and the positive things. And so it was like,
yeah,
it was good. And then actually I think he told us the bad, then the good. And that's when you said, do we have a deal or not?
Yeah.
And then he goes, yeah. yeah, we got a deal.
And all I remember from that moment, because I was like a little puppy that was going to pee in the house if I didn't go outside. You know what I mean? Like I had, like I was going to explode.
Yeah.
So I just remember after I said, you know, we asked him that and he's like, yeah. Like all I remember doing was just, I couldn't contain it. Like I just took off running. And I just ran out into the parking lot and just did like a couple laps in the parking lot.
Yeah, he like runs around the building.
Yeah,
I couldn't stand it. Yeah, dude, I had to get it out. So it was a dream come true, you know.
There's a couple fan favorites on that album. So like such as Perfect Family. What do you guys think about when you go back and listen to that album? Do you reminded of those times when, like out of when all that was happening, or what do you think about when you go? Do you guys even listen to that album anymore? What's?
We don't really listen. I don't really listen to our records that much. I mean, every now and then when we're together, like Jared and I, I'll put something on from, but I don't usually go to that record. You know,
yeah.
I think the cool thing about that record, I feel like, is for us, at least for me and Sam, I can't speak for Sam.
Yeah, I would say
but
that's true.
I think the cool thing for me is like, it just was honest in the sense of that's where we were. I don't think we were ready to make a record. Like, yeah. I feel like we could have done a way better record if we would have been more prepared. But that process was hard, you know? Like, back then, when you went into the studio, like, there was no, like...
There was no such thing as Pro Tools or...
Yeah.
It was 2-inch tape, you know?
You,
I mean?
Like, there was no messing up. Like, if you messed up, you just had to do it over, you know? And so, like, for all of us, it was really... It was a trying... I think it was good because it made us better musicians. But, like, I remember, dude, like Barry, like he's like, okay, we're gonna do some guitars and then we're gonna start trying to sing tomorrow morning. So I get in there, I'm all stoked, I'm ready to go. I sing. He's like, well, switching out mics and everything, and he's like, man, I don't know. And then finally he's like, dude, I don't know, you might sing better in the afternoon, it's not working out, we're gonna go do some more guitars. So I'm like, oh, okay, shoot.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, yeah, maybe I have morning voice or something. I don't know. And then the afternoon comes, we have lunch, then I go back in, and then he's like talking into me through the talkback mic, you know, I'm in the ISO booth, and he's like, dude, let's try after dinner. We're gonna do some bass, maybe some more guitars, some filler stuff, but maybe you're like a nighttime singer. And so like I'm like, yeah, probably so. And then, like, that night, at about 2 o'clock in the morning, he's like, you know, we've wrestled with it all night, and about 2 o'clock in the morning, and he's like, he calls in, and he hits the little button and says, hey, Davey? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, man, let's just try it again tomorrow, you know? And so, like, that was our experience.
Yeah.
Was like, you had to learn to play music. And I think it was good. I think back then, like, if you see bands from that era, I feel like they generally play tighter as a band than now. Because now it's literally like you go in the ISO booth. By the time you get back and to listen to yourself sing, it's already, the timing's already lined up. It's quantized. You know, it's been auto-tuned. Yeah. Everything sounds perfect already, you know? So, and it's like, it's... More now than ever, I hear people just go, no, that's good enough. That's good. You know, it's versus like try again, you know?
That's the one.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah, there was something beautiful about being forced to get it right, you know?
Right.
And I remember on that record too, like there was one moment where, you know, it'd been a lot of long struggle and I did something different and it worked good. And I remember everybody in the other room just screaming like, yeah, that was it, you know? And that would have never happened if we were just kind of like, everything was getting fixed as it was going down.
Yeah.
You know?
I was listening back to the discography and was listening to Static, which came out in 98, And I feel like as I was listening to that one, it sounds as if you guys are trying to figure out your sound a little more, like you're kind of experimenting with some different things. So talk a little bit about that season of your band. This is your second album, and you're still trying to figure some things out.
Yeah, Static was interesting because, there was always the concern of having a sophomore slump. You know what I mean? Like, the first record, you know, I think it blew all of us away. It did really well. Sold a lot of records, and we were touring, and we had, a year and a half of touring under our belt. And so, it was kind of, we kind of coming off the road. But at that point, for the first record, you had your whole life kind of to write those songs or to mess around. This time, there was a year and a half. And we didn't even know how to write.
And most of that was touring,
Yeah, so most of that we were gone.
We had like maybe a month or two to where we're actually writing.
And actually, we spent a lot of time in just a house together that we were kind of demoing, writing songs. I think that's a great way of putting it. I think we were trying to figure out who we were. There was definitely, when I listened back through our discography, they all have moments. Every record has moments and things that I thought, oh, that was cool or whatever. But that one was probably the biggest struggle for us as artists. I feel like we were pushed in lots of ways to think about things really through a pretty sanitized lens. It was kind of the whole, you got to have a hit. And you got to write songs for radio. And we're still real innocent at that point, not understanding that kind of what that was doing to our souls artistically too. It was kind of sucking it dry, And so I think when I listen to that record, that one's the most like, oh man, if I could go back and do that again,
I think it's like, we are learning to be artists in general, I think that's like, there's the pressure. I think true art connects with humans on a deep level. Like the best art is not saying something new. It's not like bringing up some new emotion or some new idea. It's telling an old and ancient idea. I mean, we've all had the same emotions for generations, It's saying some old truth in a way that is new and refreshing, and somebody else can actually connect to it. That's any form of art. That's film. That's painting. I think when you can, when your painting or your art can, your music or a film that you make can connect with somebody on a deeper human level, like you've done it, you've made good art. And so, the thing is, though, is that has to come from deep within you. And I think for us in that record, at least for me, like I was trying to figure out ways to connect with people. Like if I say it this way, if I do this, it'd be cool or sound cool. Or
if it's this many beats per minute, they can jump around to.
Yeah. Like what formula can I figure out? Yeah. And
that's a great way. It was very formulaic. Yeah.
And it, in some ways it did, like we had our first like number one,
CHR
song on that one. And was a super good feeling, but like, so it was just kind of a tough, I don't personally feel bad about it in the sense of like, I did something wrong.
Yeah.
But I think hindsight, you realize you could have, that it needed to come from a different space, maybe heart more than head. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know this is a little bit difficult question to answer because it's hypothetical, but if you could have gone back to 96 and you're faced with, should we sign or should we not? Do you think it would have been helpful for you guys to have a few years of just figuring stuff out without the pressures of a label, without the pressures of how you're trying to write formulaic, as you said, or do you feel like that was helpful for you guys early on?
Well, I don't think back then, I don't know that it was necessarily do or die, but I don't think back then, we were all in a place where, we are at a kind of critical point in life that we have to decide, are we going to pursue a career in what we're studying, or are we going to pursue a career in this? So, I mean, outside of like God doing something with it and a miraculous thing, like I don't think it would have ever happened if we wouldn't have taken that opportunity.
It's funny because I don't think we were ready.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
I think Eddie knew that to a certain extent.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think Sam's right. We needed to do it, but so it's hard. It's hard. I think the hard part is like a lot of artists, like their first demos, nobody ever hears, you know, our first songs we ever wrote,
people heard
were like out released worldwide for the, you know, for the world to hear, you know, so
and pick apart
and judge and say this band's this way or that way, you know, but.
You know, it's interesting. I look back at that time in our career, and this is, I think, why you were talking about the third record, Davey. I think those first two were kind of our demos. You know, like Davey said, that everybody got to hear. And we learned, like, okay, we don't want to do this. This was good. We don't want to do that. What do we want to do? And I think that's where we get to the third record. I got it.
It was an interesting year after that Static album. You had some lineup changes, and then you put out self-titled in 99. And essentially, the last couple of songs are these really beautiful like worship ballads, and they're two of my favorite songs in your discography. But I found, Davey, I was reading through some old like interviews or old reviews of albums, and I think it was like Jesus Freak Hideout or something, quoted you in this bio in 99. And you said, God has given us a renewed vision. I've never felt closer to God than I do now. So I'm interested in what was going on, not just in the life of the band, but in your life at the time that kind of led you guys to write the type of songs you were writing.
What did I say? I can't remember what I...
Yeah,
I missed that last part. Said, God has given us new vision. What?
God, yeah, a new vision, and I've never felt closer to God than I do now.
Huh.
Yeah, so it's interesting that was that quote, and then the last two songs on that album, and it was like these like what was going on at that time that was forcing you to write those type of songs.
Like, I think life just started to hit. I think the weight of the record before and the pressure that I think some of it was from the label, some of it was self-inflicted. Like, we were carrying all of our own production. And we didn't really open for anybody. Like, we were headlining our own shows at that point, and we brought full lights and sound, and we had probably four or five guys that we had employed at that time. So there was also this pressure. Yeah. And we got to the point where we had to write this record, and it was our third record, and I think we were just tired. I think everybody felt like there has to be something more than this. You know, this is... It's kind of when the shine kind of wears off on something. You know, you have this idea when you're a kid and you're watching MTV and you're like, dude, I could be one of those bands. And then all of a sudden you're like, it's not as glamorous, you know, as you thought it was. You know, like we were our own crew guys too. You know, we were setting our, you know, we had those guys hired, but they needed our help setting up stuff too. I mean, it was like all hands on deck. And so... And I think there was some tension too with, like, you know, a lot of us were newly married and trying to figure out how to deal with being away, you know, 250 days a year touring. And so all that to say, it came down to this part. I think that record, it just had to get real, you know, and we just had to be honest. And I think the thing I love about that record and that time is that it was painful, but it was also real, you know? It wasn't like we were trying to, like, make people jump, you know? We weren't, like, figuring out the BPMs. We were figuring out how to... For the first time, at least in my life, for the first time ever, I was trying to figure out how to survive, and I was using music as my therapy. And I think Matt, our drummer, who was actually probably... I think he probably wrote more songs than I did on that record. I'd say he was probably 50% and I was maybe like 40% and or maybe like 30%, and the rest of the band like 20%. But he was doing the, he was in the same spot, and it's crazy because what I saw, you know, when I when we tried on the second record, when we tried to write songs that made people that we could that would encourage people to connect, like our focus was how do we get people to connect to our music. People came to the show and said, oh man, you know, like I listen to this song, it helps me in the morning, you know, I get pumped up when I hear Super Good Feeling or whatever. And then we got to our third record and now all of a sudden it was a dramatic change. Like people were coming to the show saying, man, my brother committed suicide, or my dad died last, you know, a couple months ago, or my parents went through a divorce, or like really heavy things. And they, and then they were saying that, and then they were saying, and I've had your record on repeat. I feel like, you know, exactly how I feel, like you've been in the same spot. And so all of a sudden, I think what I got out of that really was that the truest, the best form of art is the art that comes from the deepest part of who you are. And even though you think when you're writing it, nobody's going to understand what I'm saying or what this is about, you realize that we're all humans and there's a human condition there that's connective, that connects us to each other. You know, that says you're able to say something in music that luckily somehow we were able to say something in music that was connected deeply to other people. And so that's been a theme for me, man, since that record. Even with, you know, I ran a record label for about 7 years, and that's what I would tell my artist. You know, they would actually come to me. It was the opposite of the normal record label. They'd be like, hey, should we write a Christian radio song? And I'd be like, do you listen to Christian radio? No. Do you like anything on Christian radio? No, not really. Then no, you shouldn't write a Christian radio song. Write what's from your gut. Write what's from your heart. That's what's going to affect people.
Yeah.
Okay, so Again for the First Time came out in 2002. That one's probably your most popular album, so it was also your first release on Tooth & Nail. So can you guys talk about what the how the label change came to be and your transition to Tooth & Nail, since that was kind of your first original goal was to go to that album, that label?
It's also the first one Jared did. That's probably why it's the most popular.
Yeah.
Finally had a pretty face on there.
Jared has entered the conversation. Hey, oh, yeah. So
you can tell the band got younger for sure.
I do want to say this. What's funny, the title, the self-titled record, I think that title Bleach, just going Bleach, was us. It was a statement. It was us saying, this is who we are. It or not, this is who we are. And it was almost like a restart, you know, like you said. And we lost some members, a couple new members stepped in. And then Matt, our drummer and main songwriter, really, left the band. And, you know, he just was tired. And we had a couple other people leave.
Yeah, Russ and Matt.
And we added Jerry, Milam,
Jared.
And Jared. And so we'd already did a self-titled record, so what would the next record be called? But again, for the first time. Like, it's like, here we go again. We're starting over, kind of.
That's funny. And it's interesting because what's crazy, so after a couple of the original guys left, Matt and Davey and I kind of made an agreement that if any of us left, we would hang it up. You know, we just felt like we couldn't. And so when Matt came to us and said, guys, I think I'm done, you know, our initial reaction was, okay, well, let's plan a farewell tour and we're done. And Davey and I still really had a passion to keep going, but we felt like we kind of made this covenant with one another, and that it was time, and we wanted to honor that and honor what we really felt like should be. And so Russ and Matt came to us and sat us down and said, guys, you know what? Like, we don't think you and Davey are done, and we want you to keep going, you know? And so it was cool because it was kind of like, you know, especially, you know, with Matt, just a blessing from, you know, kind of one of the forefathers. We always joke about that, but one of the originals, you know, saying, look, guys, keep going, you know. And especially when we added Milam and Jerry and Jared, like, there was just new life. And I think probably for the first time, no pun intended about that, the record title, but it really was, I think, Davey and I were in our lane musically, and just we were all on more of the same page than any of us had ever been prior to that.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah,
with
sure.
the new guys.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
Yeah, I feel like there was this excitement and a new freedom.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember we had went through some crazy stuff. I mean, we lost a record label. We had switched booking agents at the time, and so we had went from making a lot of money for shows to making like
not a whole lot of money.
Literally like
yeah
nothing. Like we were paying the opening artists sometimes more than what we actually got paid, and so bad decision. The booking decision was just bad,
horrible.
It was like so bad, it was just, it did not work. And so literally, we had moved, Sam and I had both moved back in with I'd moved in with my in-laws at the time, and Sam had moved in with his
in-laws.
Yeah, so we'd moved back to Indiana and didn't get paid for about a year.
Yeah.
And we still pushed on. Well, that, it was tough time, but it was also super exciting. Like, Jared and Jerry and Milam, like, brought this whole new
life
to it, and we were just like Sam said, we were all in the same. Like, it was like balls to the wall, man. I mean, like, literally, let's turn up the amps. Let's do it. Let's rock, you know? And that's what that record came out to be, I think. It was like, let's just, you know, let's go.
Let's have fun. Let's have, it was really joy, you know? I think it was like, having gone through a season of a lot of loss and a lot of kind of thinking we were done you know, like David said, with, you know, with the record label and all that transition to like, holy cow, like we still have something to say, you know, and we have, there's a joy, man. And so we wanted to just do a record that was a lot of fun and really, I think, expressed our personality and who we are, you know, so.
I think it was a good time in music, too. A bunch of cool stuff
was
coming
out. Yeah, there
was
a lot of fun.
So we were inspired. How'd you feel, Jared?
Yeah, so for me, you know, I was playing with Reliant K just for a little bit, living in Ohio, and just wasn't sure that's what I wanted to do, but I didn't, you know, I knew Matt and the guys in Bleach very well because my brother Milam was already playing guitar for them, so, but loved them like brothers already, and they just asked, you know, how it was going on tour for me, and I was like, I don't know what I want to do. And I remember him saying, well, we weren't going to ask you, but if you're not sure you want to keep doing it, we'd love to have you, like, join up, take Matt's place. And it wasn't instant. It was like I had to think about it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it took a few days to just be like, you know what? I feel like this is what I need to do. I won't regret being in a band with these guys that I love so much. And so for that period of time, I even had people – tell me you're stupid, like you're quitting an up-and-coming band and you're joining a band that's not necessarily up-and-coming. They don't have a record deal right now, you know. They've been a band for what, 4 years?
Yeah, probably before. 4 or 5 years.
So, you know, it was crazy, but I didn't care, and I don't regret it at all. No matter what, being with these guys is probably like the best part of my life. That was a very exciting time. I was young and playing with guys I loved, and Milam and I would write songs in our parents' basement sometimes when he was home from college, and we even have some riffs on Again for the First Time that we wrote and we brought to the table, and then the rest of the guys, you know, helped complete it as a song, which all of us brought stuff to the table in different ways. That was just fun. And thinking about
The recording process was...
That was amazing. That was a blast. Oren Thornton.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we basically lived in our bus for like 6 months or something in Illinois. No,
it was in Missouri.
Missouri. And we basically hunted, fished, and recorded when we felt like it.
Yeah, you know? And the other thing about that record, which I always forget, but... we recorded the first part, like the first five songs independently.
Yeah.
Like we had no, we funded it. We did it all on our own. And we did the first five songs with the idea that we're going to pitch it to other labels. And there was a, it was like, we actually, there was a close, like we almost were on a label called Vagrant Records, which at the moment was pretty,
favorite.
Yeah, it was like our favorite label, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not a Christian label, but yeah. They had like the Get Up Kids and
Promise Chris Ring.
I don't know if they had the Promise Ring, but
they did early on. Oh, they did. And then yeah, Chris Saves Carrava, the Day, Saves the Day. Yeah.
So
emo.
Yeah.
But
it was a good time.
We pitched to them and to Tooth and Nail, and Tooth and Nail fit pretty quickly, and so that's the rest is history. But yeah, that recording process, we were in the middle of nowhere in, what was it? Not Bodark, but
Stockton, Missouri,
in a little house that our producer's dad owned that he had converted into a studio. And it started out normal hours, like we'd start at 10 and end at like
10, maybe
10 o'clock. And then the next day we started at 11 and ended at 11. Then it got to really weird hours where we were starting at like 9 o'clock at night. And then quitting at like
9 in the morning.
Like it was just probably the funnest record that I've ever recorded.
Oh yeah, for sure.
We just had a blast, man.
And it shows. Like that album is so much fun to listen to from start to finish. It's still one of those ones I'll just put on and listen to the whole thing and just make me feel like life is okay.
Yeah, that's
even
awesome.
Even though maybe sometimes it's not. You mentioned kind of in passing a little bit about how you lost a record label. What exactly happened there? Not to, like, I don't want you to throw anything.
No, it's cool.
Something bad happened. But
no, it. So what happened was really, I think with the third record, with the Couch record, self-titled. It's interesting because on that record, it was the first time that, like Dave said, we really like kind of felt like we found ourselves. And in that process, we weren't really interested. Not that we didn't want to write songs that radio would pick up or whatever, but that just wasn't our focus, you know? And I think that bothered. There was also a change at the label. Eddie, who signed us, had sold Forefront to EMI, which is Capitol now. And and Eddie was the one who had the passion for us, you know? And so it's kind of like we got handed off to a team, really a leadership that didn't really have as much passion for who we were,
and the label in general is going a different direction. I mean, yeah. they like Stacey Arica was like the big artist, you know, like
in Raze.
It was like pop, you know, pop music was like, and we're like, I mean, we're like garage rock, you know what I mean? Like that's what we'd always been, was like
a rock and roll band.
Garage band, you know, and so it was just a different.
Yeah.
Direction. And so they pretty much called us in and said, hey, we're not going to pick up your option. So we got, I mean, we were all relieved, but it was like, they pretty much were like, yeah, we're going in a different direction than you guys are going. And we were like, yeah, we can see that. We can feel that, you know? So I think that's pretty much how it worked.
Yeah. So that was cool. I mean, yeah. So there was no real neat drama or anything.
Finding bags of poop on their doorsteps and stuff was happened, I think.
Right. Yeah, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, no. It's not.
Moving on a little bit, you have to follow that one up, which is tough to begin with. And then, like, you know, it's a difficult year for the band with Jaron and Milam losing their brother. And so that's tough. So talk a little bit about that fifth album, and talk a little bit about that time of a band. You guys seem like you're a family. So talk a little bit about what it was like walking through that, but also having to still work.
Yeah, definitely.
you said the key word, family, right? Like, that's these guys are my brothers. I mean, that's first and foremost, and everything we did, we approached like that. It's always been all for one, one for all, you know. And yeah, it was weird because we had again had just toured our butts off, and we'd been with again for the first time. I mean, we were, you know, we were out for a good couple years touring that record, and you know, trying to write another record, a follow-up record to that, while we were on the road. And it was weird because it was kind of the first time I felt like songs weren't coming easily, you know. It was really, and it was weird because we thought, we went in there with the intention to write a fun record again, but like, or at least, you know, I don't know, not nearly as serious as what Astronomy ended up being. Yeah. So, go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just say, I'll just say this. Like, for me, that was the hardest. Like, we came off the easiest and the funnest.
Yeah.
That was the hardest, by far, recording experience I've ever had. And I literally...
You went crazy a little bit, didn't you, Davey?
Yeah. Yeah, I went... I lost my mind a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I really did. Like, I kind of... I don't know if it was...
Yeah, no, I'd say, bad. Yeah, it was clinical, I'd say,
there was an underlining feeling of between everybody. It was unsettling. Like, for Milam and I, for the whole band, you know, it was a sensitive time. The war started, you know, that was after 9/11. I mean, just a lot of crap going on, but also within our own personal life. Sam, was your mom already diagnosed?
My mom, right around that time had been diagnosed with cancer, with stage 4 breast cancer. Oh, wow. And so that was, that was heavy.
Davey's dad.
And Davey's dad, yeah, had gotten sick.
Yeah.
But with Josh, our Milam and I's oldest brother that was killed in Iraq, I mean, starting the record process, like recording for Astronomy, was he went to war. And so that was kind of earth shattering for Milam and I. But we still wanted to focus on this record. I remember... right before we started recording, the guys in the band bought me my first beer because I turned 21. That was like, and then let's go start recording this Astronomy. In the meantime, Josh is over there fighting a war, and we had no idea what the outcome of that was going to be. You know, he hadn't been killed at that point in time yet. So with this record, man, it's crazy. Literally after he was killed, I think I was on a plane ride to his memorial in Colorado, and I listened to Astronomy. It wasn't out yet, but it was done being mastered, and I mean, I wept. I mean, it was like these songs were written for this exact moment in my life, and it's just unexplainable. We didn't know what we were writing for. We didn't necessarily, I mean, Davey and I wrote part of a song because we were depressed and we just got pulled over and the cop was convinced we had marijuana in the car. And
it was like, we don't do that.
I remember getting back to the studio directly after that happened and we were just kind of like violated, you know, and what was it? The Feather Falls?
Yeah.
That song? I mean.
Plan to pull through.
And it was like, we felt like. You know, he'd, like, taking me out of the car, and he's like...
He strips. I wasn't born yet.
No. He goes, I wasn't born yesterday. He's like, you want to tell me something now that you're away from your friend? Does he have any drugs on him? I think it was just because, you know, I don't have any tattoos, but Jared does, so I think it was because he had tattoos and looked rough.
He knows, yeah.
No, but I think that's the biggest thing that blows my mind about this record, that record, is that... I can remember several conversations of the parts that I can remember about that recording process where I can remember there were several conversations of, I have no clue what this record or these songs are about. I mean, literally we had those discussions. Like, I don't know what these songs are about.
Yeah. I mean,
and then the stuff happens, you know, with Milam and Jared's brother, with Josh, and all of a sudden it's like, everything just makes sense. Like, all the lyrics are just like, they just make sense. Yeah. They're like, that's what it's about.
Like tired heart, plan to pull through. It's like keep moving forward. I mean, it's all over the board, man, with that record.
Moving on, yeah.
Moving on, yeah. It's cool. It wasn't cool at the time. And we decided to do tape again. Go figure.
Yeah, that was an interesting process because that was, we went back to doing 2-inch tape instead of doing Pro Tools. Just wanted to kind of like push ourselves again. And so that, we were already being pushed in every way we could. That was probably
that first song, Get Up on Astronomy, was brutal for me. Because it's all kick and I don't play double kick. And so I had to get it right, the whole song perfectly right. So
you had to nail it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it took me at least 2 tries on that one, guys. I'll be honest.
I didn't nail it on the first one. 2 days worth of tries.
Right, right.
And that's actually, that song's actually the reason you guys broke up, because you didn't want to play that live anymore.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, you got it. Yeah.
Well, you should see how his right calf is like, he's like, you know, 36 inches around. In,
just from that.
After Astronomy, you guys announced, we've been into this, but you guys were disbanding. So can you guys talk about how you landed on that decision, but also how you decided to make one more album as a kind of final decision as the band to do one more thing? Because that's a rare thing for a band to be able to make that decision, but also have the ability to stay together for one more final, not only tour, but also for an album.
So when we were doing it again for the first time, I was getting ready to have my first child, Journey, and he's a teenager now. He'll be a sophomore in high school, which is weird, but so you know, like that was kind of a new season was starting, and it was really cool. And my wife's superwoman, and like she was amazing. While I was on the road, and she did an amazing job. You know, basically being a single mom a lot of times. And so when we got to after Astronomy, we toured, we did a Five Iron Frenzy's farewell tour, and that was long, and it was a lot of fun, but it was hard, you know. I think we were all just
as soon as we got done with that,
yeah,
we went to Europe,
yeah,
like right after we got done, and we're in Europe during like right before Christmas,
yeah. And Davey's dad had had an emergency surgery and almost died on the table. And so he flew home. There was a lot of stuff happening with families, you know. And, you know, obviously at that point, Josh had been killed. And there was a lot that family stuff was just really kind of coming to the forefront in a lot of ways, and realizing how much we were gone and away. I started really thinking, you know, it's hard for me to be a good husband and daddy when I'm gone 200 days a year. It really, you know, started to kind of sink in. Not that it can't be done. For me personally, it was becoming difficult. And my mom, Jared, had been through a tough season, really unimaginably tough. Davey had with his dad. My mom being diagnosed with cancer. So there's a lot of family stuff that hit at once. And we thought, you know what, maybe it's time for us to stop touring. These dudes are still my best friends in the world, you know. Like, there's never been a we need to get away from each other moment, you know.
Yeah.
I'll add to that too. I mean, when I joined, these guys had like, it was just an incredible plan of like taking care of each other, you know. If somebody didn't need to leave home, or if they had a problem at home, then, you know, we would be like, you can't come. Like, you need to be home. This is not as important as it is to be with your wife or with your child during this time. Or, you know, they gave Milam and I a few months off and still paid us salary when we were with family after our brother died. And, I mean, stuff like that was really important to these guys before I even joined the band, which I've always really appreciated. But it all started happening to all of us at the same time. It was like, maybe we all need to talk about being home
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I was the one that brought it up, I think. I know I was. And
yeah,
what happened was, I remember we were in Holland in this town called Houda.
Houda.
Yeah, it's spelled like Gouda, like the cheese, that town.
It is the cheese.
Yeah, that's where it's from.
Anyway, that night, Milam and I actually, during that five iron tour, I was really struggling. And I also had, like, I could tell my marriage was having some problems. And I just knew it was time, you know? And I hadn't really talked to anybody about it. And we get done with that five iron tour, go straight to Europe. And I walked out. Milam wanted to take a picture of this, like, this cool building that was out. It kind of looked like a cathedral. But he was like, I want to go get a picture of that. I go, I'll go with you. And so we were standing out there, and we took a picture of it. And just a kind of testament to the dudes in the band. Like, I was like, Milam. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, dude, I think it's about time. I think I'm going to have to quit the band. And he goes, what? And I was like, yeah, I need to be home, you know? And he goes, okay. I think that's okay. You know, it was like not a fight. It wasn't. He was just like, yeah. I trust you, man. That's kind of what it was. And and I walked back from that. Me and him walked back. And when I get back, like, Sam and Jared and them are like, dude, where you been? And I'm like, just taking a picture of this thing. And he's like, this is like midnight, right?
Yeah.
It's like midnight, and he's like, I just got a call from your family. My dad had went into surgery, and it was supposed to be like an in and out thing, just like easy. And long story short, they nicked something, and he began to bleed internally, and like they were like, you have to come home now. Like he might not make it. And so like I literally at 11 o'clock midnight. Got into a little bitty,
it was like a van thing,
minivan. Yeah. I mean, minivan. Like the wheels were like 13 inches.
Like you can't even imagine how many that it was. That's, you know,
it was like
the Netherlands for you.
Yeah, it was like a compact car, like the smallest compact car,
but a van
shape. And anyway, so we get into that, and we drove all the way to Germany to Frankfurt, and I got the first flight out and flew out. But the crazy thing is back then, like. Dude, I got on, like, what is that, like a 12, 13-hour flight?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I got on that flight, and I didn't know, like, when I got off the flight. There was no internet. There was no, like, cell phones. I just didn't know. Like, for, like, 12, 13 hours, like, when I get home, is my dad going to be dead?
Yeah.
And luckily, he made it through it, but all that kind of happened for me all at once.
Yeah.
I remember Sam even, like, I told him on the, because he rode with me and the other guy, and I was like, dude, I just told Milam that I think I need to quit the band. And he was like, dude, like, don't make any decisions when you're stressed out. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on right now. Your dad's, he was thinking I was just making that decision because of my dad, but there was other stuff involved. But he's like, they say don't make decisions in moments of stress. And I was like, okay, well, I've been thinking about it for a long, long time. But so, yeah, so that's how, and then I think all of that is a testament to why we did the next record and why we did a farewell tour, and is because we love each other. Like, these guys are my brothers.
Yeah.
Like, we are, like, all for one for all. Even when we're out on tour with bands, like, we all, you wouldn't mess with one of us because all of us would be, like,
you'd be dead.
If you mess with one of us, like, even just a practical joke, like, it would be six guys on you, you know?
Hard.
With some other joke, you know what I mean?
Usually with BB guns that were involved. And poop and pee, yeah.
Right. Going, yeah, because it works so well the first time. So moving forward a little bit, fast forward to 2010 when you made My Heart Happy, and you decided to, you would come back and maybe play some shows, and you've played some shows sporadically. I finally got to see you guys again, I think 2 years ago at Murray Hill with Five Iron, and it was a delightful day. But talk a little bit about that decision to come back, play some shows, maybe write some music. Why ultimately did you guys decide to be one of those bands that
never quit?
Yeah, never quit. Right.
I think it's the same reason, man, because we're best friends, man. I mean,
we have fun.
We love hanging out, and we love what we were able to do, you know? So it's like, you know, I know there's some people that get online and say stuff like, oh, I thought you quit in 2004 or 2005 or whatever. And we're just like,
well, we quit touring.
We quit touring. We're not like picking up the, you know, we're not getting in a bus and getting ready to head out for 250 dates. But I feel like we should be able to play music if we want to, you know, and hopefully, you know, some people still come and like it, you know. Yeah. So,
yeah.
It was a cool opportunity for us to get back together as buds and play another rock and roll show.
Yeah.
It helped to do it with our old friends with Five Iron Frenzy. And then who else played?
House of Heroes.
The wedding. Yeah, House of Heroes played that day.
Love all
the wedding.
Those guys.
The wedding played too. Those guys were my roommates at the time too. So
yeah.
Oh wow, that's great.
Yeah, man. And the thing is, yeah, I think for us, like, it's always a part of our story, you know. It's been an honor that, like Davey said, you know, people still come out to shows and they still like ask us to do stuff, you know. So yeah, we can't do it in the same, you know, context that we did 10, 15, however many years ago, but we can still do it, you know? And so, so we did.
At some point you guys hinted at some new music. Will we ever get to get our ears upon those things, or what's going on there?
We're the worst at that, man. I feel like
empty promises.
It's empty promises. Empty,
it's all from Jared, though. It's all Jared.
And I'll tell you what it is.
I'm not.
The reality is, everybody. We all just like doing the shows. We all love that part of our life, and we love making music and making art together.
Yeah.
Like, there's something that happens with the five of us, the six of us, including Matt. You know that, like. There's a bond there that's unbreakable, you know? And so I think all of us want to, then it comes down to like, if it actually happens because of life and family and jobs and things that are going on with other people. And I think that's where it usually falls short. You know, we even had we'd rented a room, a studio room, and we're writing and writing and, come up with ideas, and you know, for a good month and a half, 2 months, and where we just bought a place to practice, you know. Yeah. But you know, even if just to say, hey, let's try Thursday nights, you know, just to get everybody there was like,
yeah, it's hard.
Never did.
Not ever. But hey, you know, like, here's the, I don't think any of us counted out. You know, if we can make it happen, I think we'd all love to do that. But I think we've also learned the, you know, how that, you know, priority is our family, and is you know, taking care of those things, and we always have, if nothing else, you know, we always have an opportunity to get together and play some old songs, you know, and have fun doing that. So but yeah, hopefully, who knows?
We've tried a few times. Like, it's been like 4 or 5 times we've tried to do it, and
see, one of these times it'll happen.
Yeah, here's the thing. I think whenever it happens, I don't think we're going to... I hope nobody says anything about it. I hope we just...
do it.
Here's some new songs.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not like... there's no lead up.
Basically, Davey's saying, Sam, shut up. Quit saying stuff. Quit asking people crap and stuff.
I just heard that you guys have new music and you're releasing it tomorrow. So I'm excited about that.
Maybe so.
We'll put it out on Facebook,
surprise,
man.
Surprise.
I don't think the story's done either. I mean, I think all of us love music, so
yeah.
I think somewhere or another you're gonna hear something. Us be involved in music some way, you know?
Yeah.
Some of us.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, Jared's still 18, so he's got a long road ahead of him.
I've got a lot to look forward to, guys.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the time changes, you guys started in the mid 90s, but now the music industry is substantially different. So how do you guys feel that Bleach fits in, or would have fit in, actually, is a better question. How do you feel Bleach would have fit in the current music market? What would you guys be doing differently now versus how you guys did it back in early 90s and then 2000?
I don't think it's weird. It's weird because I don't think we would have fit in the Christian. I don't think we would have fit in the Christian music industry the way it currently is. Not because I hate it or anything like that, or we're against it, but
that reason. Even the
Even if it's a valid reason.
I just don't think
that's not the reason.
Now, and here's the thing I've gotten to as I've gotten older. Like, you know, Jared and I do tours. Like right now we work with Food for the Hungry, and we go on tours that are, you know, like we've been out with Toby Mac a few times and Chris Tomlin, and I think the thing that that makes me stoked about Toby or is that he's just doing what he's doing his thing. He's being real. That's him.
He's good at it.
You know, and he's good at it. He's an honest, good dude. And it's like, yeah, I can get behind that 100%. But I wouldn't say his thing is necessarily my thing. You know what I mean? Or what Bleach was. And so the weird thing about our band is that we never really, even in that moment, when we were back then, when we had more of a chance, like I don't think we ever really fit in completely in one spot. But I don't think we ever, like... Here's an example. We did a couple festival shows. We did Cornerstone, and we did this festival, Sunshine Festival, and that was in 2010, I think. So we'd been broken up for like 5 or 6 years. We did the Cornerstone Festival, we did the Cornerstone Festival, and like bands like there was a band. Oh, what's that band's name? They just broke up. They're crazy nuts on stage. Freaking awesome. The Chariot.
Chariot.
Yeah, like one of those dudes hollers at us like, dude, Bleach, what's up? You know, I don't know exactly what he said, but something to the effect of like, he listened to us when he was a kid and it meant something to him, you know?
You are our first rock and roll show.
Yeah, something like that. And there's a lot of bands like that that were like that. And then we played Sunshine Festival and it was like Casting Crowns and Sanctus Real and some of these other bands came to our show and were saying similar things, you know? So it's like, we never had like a home really, you know, but we were able to have a widespread, just different, you know? I don't know. I don't really know.
Widespread different, huh?
Yeah. Just a different,
thanks, Davey.
Just a weird group of people that actually liked us.
Yeah. It was all random.
Yeah.
It was just always a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, you guys are kind of firmly kind of in that market, for better or for worse. So as guys that were kind of in the Christian market for 10 years, what would you say was the most challenging part of kind of being in a music industry that's labeled as Christian?
Oh, man.
Where do we begin?
Sneaking all of our bad habits, you know?
all that marijuana you had to hide from the police.
Yeah, the stuff Davey and Jared got pulled over for.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think sometimes there was always, I don't know, there was one of the things that I saw that ended up being, I think, a dangerous thing and a downfall was, you know, these kids would get thrown into this Christian music industry world and then they were expected to be a pastor. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or like... And it's just like, honestly, most didn't get into it because they were theologically brilliant or, you know what I mean? It was because, like, they loved Jesus and they had songs, you know what I mean? And
they went to a youth group because there was a girl there that they liked.
Yeah, that's probably how it began.
And they played guitar and then people liked their songs and next thing you know, they're, like, standing in front of people. And so, like Sam said, they're expected to be some kind of spiritual mentor. And really, they're just a high school kid that, like, just likes playing music and just happened to go to church.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
I think it was, you know, it was hard because I remember, like, we would get asked, like, hey, will you guys do an altar call? And we finally, like, you know, number one, we wouldn't do it. But there was moments that we said, we started kind of challenging that, you know? It's like, look, what... is there going to be follow-up? Is there going to be any way to make sure these kids, like, you know, like, that this was a sincere thing? Or is it just, are you just going to, you know, like, oh, is it about numbers and how many kids raised their hand and said they love Jesus now? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it was just, that stuff always irritated me.
Yeah, you guys should start going and you should start going into churches now and doing that because it's the same thing like on a Sunday morning. Like,
I always called it, I always called it abortion evangelism. It's like, hey, let's just birth these, you know, quote unquote, birth these like new little innocent like Christian babies, and then we'll just leave them to die. You know what I mean? It just didn't. It was horrible. And you can, you know, there's different. There's a website. It's a Facebook page called 90s Music 90s Christian music recovery group or whatever, and it's really interesting to see, like, some of the stories on there. You know what I mean? Like people who were...
Yeah.
And like, honestly, sometimes what happened because of that kind of stuff, you know? So,
Sam, you just confessed. List's looking at that what? On Facebook.
I do look at it.
Oh, man.
What? I don't care. I think it's funny.
You just... Yeah.
You know, I mean, not that stuff. I just think, like, the group is funny. But anyway. Yeah, so I just think, you know, there's just a lot of... I think there was... yeah, it was hard. I mean, it was definitely hard. So...
I mean, yeah, and you just see all different kinds of denominations, all different kinds of belief systems, all different kinds of crazy and normal and weird.
A lot of crazy, yeah.
I mean, we've been to so many different churches, and you'd have... I mean, my buddy... Actually, one of the guys in the wedding said one time he went, and then we'd had these similar situations, but they went into this, they were doing this youth group, they were planning a youth group at a church, and it was like an off day, but they booked it, and the pastor comes up to him, he doesn't say anything to him, like, hi, or welcome, or anything like that, he just says, which one of you guys has the best testimony? And what he was really saying was, who's got the worst life?
Yeah,
they can talk about it, and then their life turned around and it changed. You know, like,
which of you guys has lost their virginity?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And it's like, man, I feel like it's, you know, it's hard to do that.
Yeah,
and it's weird too. I feel like a lot of our records, a lot of our songs were worship songs, but I don't think they were necessarily like worship songs like right now. I you even said it earlier. You're like, it's kind of that the last songs on the self title were kind of worshipful.
Yeah.
But I don't.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. They were our worship. You know what I mean? Like, that's how we could express it. But it might not be. I don't know.
It might not be a corporate worship situation, you know?
I think Christian music has been changed a lot by radio now, too. There's, it's an expectation. I mean, we had JPMs, we call it, Jesus per minute. Yeah. You know, that's always been a part of the industry, but now it's just, man, it's, well, this song needs to sound more worshipful. Like, it needs to sound like this Chris Tomlin song or this, or you need to say this in order to make it on the radio.
Yeah.
Instead of when we were playing, it was like, man, we made these songs. These are ours. And this song is going to, you know, it's our single. So they're going to put it on the radio. And you don't know what's going to happen, how many people are going to like it, how many records you're going to sell, but they still put it on the radio. Now, you're creating an album based on what would make Christian radio. That's kind of sad to me. That's my frustration.
It sucks. Yeah, there's that. And, you know, one of my very best friends, just to kind of say what Jared was saying, one of my very best friends is a writer for Christian music, and he had a song that said something about I need you. Something to that effect, like, I need you, God. And, or something to the effect of, it was like, kind of like, I need you, or I don't see you right now, and I need you. Something like that. And they were like, oh, that's too negative. Like, you need to say, I see you, and I need you. Not, I don't see you, and I need you. You know, like, and like, literally made, you need to change those words before I pitch that on, you know?
That's
it's
crazy.
Just like, man, just be freaking real, just
honest,
dude.
Man. Come on, how about some honesty? Yeah, that's...
You hear that rain coming down now?
I hear it. It's great. It reminded me, though, what you were saying of there's like this video that some comedian did where it's this, they're pitching these Christian song things to this group, and it's like, you got to talk about water at some point, and then talk about fire at some point, and like all these things. It's like, it's so true. Like, you listen to a Christian radio station for 10 minutes and you'll hear
it's totally formulaic.
It's just different. Yeah.
Well, speaking of rain, at the location where you guys are, what is the location for each of you guys now, having kind of had some time since the original kind of separation from everything? What are you guys up to now? Are you guys, any of you, into music still, doing your own stuff, or what's going on for each of you guys?
Go ahead, Jared.
I stayed in music pretty much. I mean, I played with what's his name,
Peter Furlick.
No, after Bleach, like, the Rocket. The Rocket. Oh, Center. Yeah, I can't. Right, sorry, Bryce.
And then, you know, I played with Audio Adrenaline in 2007. And then I, when they reformed with Kevin Max, I did that. And now I'm still playing random gigs with Peter Furler. And then, like we were talking about earlier, you guys interviewed Paper Route. We did a tour that I was on playing drums for them last November and part of December. So
his main gig's Bleach, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's all I talk about, you know.
Good old days.
And like Davey said earlier, I also do a tour rep for Food for the Hungry. So that's that. It's all kind of part-time, either playing or tour repping right now. But living in Nashville for the time being, I think I'm actually going to head to San Diego here and see if I should put some roots down there. Who knows? I like the beach. Cool. So
go Preds.
Go Preds.
Yeah, go Preds.
For go real. Preds. Yeah. Heck so, man.
Yeah. So for me, I stopped after we got done with Bleach. I did a lot of graphic design work, and then I started a record label, and I did that for about 7 years in a music publishing company called Slow Speak Records. And then I quit doing that about a year and a half ago, and started kind of full-time working with Food for the Hungry, like a nonprofit, which is an amazing organization.
But you mentioned about like playing music and writing. Davey, out of all of us, has been like nonstop. That guy's still you need to ask him to let you listen to some of his songs, because they're amazing, and he helped, you know, I mean, it's like every day he's got an acoustic in his hands and he's singing about something that's from his heart. So you need to release something, Davey.
Hey, Davey. Question: Can you let me hear some of those songs? Thanks.
Yeah.
I'll send you a part of one. How about a half of one?
I would love, Davey. Whoa. That would make my that'd make my night.
Okay.
There you go.
It just helps me, man. Writing music helps me get through junk, and I've been through a lot of junk, you know, in my life. Like, you know, I went through a divorce about 4.5 years ago, and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, you know. I'm definitely not, like, you know, it's a horrible thing, man, you know. I think it was it was horrible for her and for me, you know. But music helps me get through it, you know.
Yeah, I hear you.
So
My path was a little weird. So when we got off the road, I managed a venue called Rocket Town here in town for about 3 years.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I did that, and then I actually went to Seattle and worked at a church plant as the creative arts pastor there for about 3 years, and then I was a church planter in Chicago. So I started a church called The Anchor in Chicago, and was there for about 5 years. And then 2 years ago, came back to Nashville as one of the pastors at Journey Church here in Franklin. So, cool. Yeah, so I love Jesus more than the other guys, obviously. So,
right. They're just feeding the hungry, like, mouths. You're feeding the hungry souls. So.
Exactly. Hey.
Yeah. We're not ministers, though.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
We don't pastor.
Yeah, I pray
Sam,
for them a
Sam
lot.
Did come out and help us with I food did go hungry, out like, food for about, a, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
So like he had to do that so he could stay one up on us.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right. And Milam's full-time in Food for the Hungry. He started a sports project with it called Striking Out Poverty. So there's all four of us have been working for Food for the Hungry. Kind of funny.
Yeah.
Jerry is
a teacher.
He's a school teacher, and he teaches wrestling. He's a wrestling coach, which is pretty awesome.
Which is funny because he's a wuss.
I feel like he's a pretty little guy.
Yeah. Those wrestlers.
But he's big compared to the junior hires that he thinks
he's so tough up against. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then
Milam's adopting, right?
Yeah, heck yeah.
Yeah, we just did a benefit
still,
show.
Is that still a thing people can give to?
Yeah, man. I think, or did they reach their goal?
They reached their goal, yeah.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Yeah, all right, never mind. Save your money.
Yeah, man.
Keep your money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Find somebody else that needs help adopting.
Yeah, that's true.
They're actually thinking about changing the name to Bleach for the Hungry because everybody works out there. So just
yeah. Seriously.
Yeah.
I was gonna say Matt works. Matt, our old drummer too. He's like, I'd say he's like he came out and did that show with us too. He does pretty much any of the reunion show, any of the shows we do. He's part of it. Yeah. Know, but
he's in the CC.
He's a Bleach.
He's doing. He's a manager. So he manages like
10th Avenue North.
10th Avenue North and some other bands.
Showdown. So. Showdown Management.
Oh, cool. I thought you meant like the Showdown the band.
No, not
like,
Showdown the band.
Two very different bands. Cool. Guys, thanks for the update and thanks for talking to us for the last hour or so. It was a real joy.
Hey, we owed it to you, man. It took like 2 years to ever like get us all in the same room together. So
in the same car together.
At the same time, yeah.
Same car.
So thanks for being patient, dude. Yeah.
No problem. All right, fellas, I appreciate it. And Davey, I look forward to hearing that song. Thanks.
Now I'll write it down.